Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
Last week, Leslie Rule joined us to discuss her new book, A Tangled Web. It's a true crime book about the murder case that happened in Omaha, Nebraska. Carrie Farver was killed by a woman named Shauna Gollier. The prosecutor on the state of Nebraska versus Shauna Gollier was Jim Masteller, along with his co-prosecutor, Brenda Beadle. But Jim's joining us now to give us a little more insight in the case. Jim, just kind of to bring people up to speed on this, if they don't remember or miss Leslie's interview, this was a love triangle. Nobody was really in love, but can you kind of just set up the main players on there, who they were, Dave Krupa, Carrie Farver, and Shauna Gollier?
Sure. In October of 2012, the victim, Carrie Farver, began dating a gentleman by the name of David Krupa. David Krupa had been previously dating, prior to that, Shauna Gollier. And what happened within about 2 weeks or so of Carrie Farver beginning her relationship with David Krupa, she ended up missing, and ultimately Shauna Gollier was identified as a suspect in her disappearance.
So you get this case, obviously it's been investigated. It was investigated for 2 years by law enforcement on both sides of the river, different aspects of it. You're in the district attorney's office at the time. What does the case look like when it comes to your desk originally?
Well, this was extremely unusual how it was presented to me. So I tended to handle a lot of the arson cases for the Douglas County Attorney's Office as one of the prosecutors, and the Omaha Fire Department's arson unit brought a case to me to look at, and it was Shauna Gollier. Specifically, her house had been set on fire while she was not present, and all of her pets had died. They were of the belief that Shauna Gollier had set this fire in her own house and explained that they thought it was part of a bigger cover-up to potentially Shauna having killed Carrie Farver years before that. Realizing this is not your typical arson case, I went to talk to the chief deputy, Brenda Beadle, and she had been separately briefed by the Omaha Police Department's homicide unit regarding the homicide aspect. Thereafter, the two of us decided that we were to both proceed to work on the case.
And so how far along into the investigation was law enforcement at this time as far as the computer records of Shauna Gollier?
Well, I would say they were substantially well on their way to having completed the examination of everything they had. So they did have a lot of digital evidence uncovered by the time it was presented to our office. But at the same time, it takes an extraordinary amount of time to actually go through all this digital evidence, because what our persons were doing was when they would get a cell phone or an SD card or something like that, they would do a physical extraction of all the data on the phone or the device, which would mean that every single piece of data on that device is being extracted and looked at. So if you deleted something, it's still going to be on there likely, but it's probably going to be fragments. And so it's really labor-intensive to look at all the digital evidence that was being developed in that case.
And, of course, Shauna Gollier had been impersonating Carrie Farver for 2 years online with thousands and thousands of messages to both Dave Krupa and other people. But you get this document dump on you. It's digital documents, and it's just got to be painstaking to go through as a prosecutor and try to make sense of it, because you're seeing a mass product. You haven't followed the trail yet. And so how did law enforcement sit down and explain to you that this is what you need to focus on, because you can't read everything?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. It's the documents themselves are so voluminous, it would have been really impractical for us to look at every single page of every single report, every single item of evidence. We do rely on law enforcement. That's their job, is to do the investigation and then also present to the prosecutors summary form of the information that they've developed. We do trust them, and we rely on them with good reason. And thank goodness we had really good investigators on this case. We actually had an IT expert who was heavily involved in the extraction of the data and then the compilation of it into a form that was readily understandable by people like me and Brenda. And so it was just so important that we have good people to help us with that, and we did.
And you're, of course, referring to Tony Cava, who's a volunteer, of all things, for the Pottawatomie County, and this basically a computer genius. He takes this data and tries to extract it and paint a trail, but you get it. And so Kerry hadn't been arrested yet by the time you got the case. So how did it go from law enforcement coming to you saying, do we have enough, do we have enough? Was there a lot of that discussion?
Yeah, and this is pretty typical, especially, well, on every case, I would say, but the more serious the case, the more the discussions are between law enforcement and the prosecutor's office. And when you ultimately are discussing a charge of murder, those are going to be the most intense and most, a lot of times, the most prolonged discussions. In this case, law enforcement, which was both the Pottawatomie County Sheriff's Office in conjunction with the Omaha Police Department's Homicide Unit, had developed a great deal of evidence, circumstantial evidence, that Shanna Golier had committed a murder of Kerry Farver. However, their burden as police officers is to develop probable cause for an arrest. The prosecutor's obligation is substantially different. Ethically, we're only allowed to file charges if we reasonably believe that they are supported by probable cause. But then in addition to that, that there actually will be admissible evidence sufficient to support a conviction at trial beyond a reasonable doubt. And so not only do we need to look at whether we have probable cause to arrest someone, we also have to be convinced that in addition to that probable cause, there's going to be evidence that we can put on at this trial that we believe that would convict Ms. Golier beyond any reasonable doubt of the crime we've charged her with.
And at the time that she was charged, you didn't have a body, right?
Yeah, we've never located the body of the victim, Kerry Farver. These bodiless cases are extremely difficult to prosecute. We actually, in Douglas County, though, have prosecuted several of them in recent history. In the 17 years I was in the office, we tried three separate bodiless murder cases.
And to reset this, we're talking to Jim Masteller. He was the co-prosecutor on the case of State of Nebraska versus Shanna Golier. It is the book the murder that Leslie Rule wrote about in her book, A Tangled Web. Jim is now a district judge in Omaha, Nebraska, and he is also a native of Sioux City. So, Jim, getting back to this, nobody, so you really don't even know if she's dead. I mean, you can assume that, but you don't know. The other big question is, where was she killed? Because you got a river that separates you from Council Bluffs there, and Kerry Farver lived in Macedonia, Iowa. So how did you deal with that issue? Because you had to have thought about it from the get-go.
Yeah, and since we've had several occasions, unfortunately, to try these cases, if you think about it, your typical murder case, there's all these questions that are already answered. Someone hears a gunshot. They run out to where the gunshot is, and they locate a body. The body's been shot. You, just from that situation, you know the manner of death. You know where the death occurred. You know the time of the death. All these things you take for granted. Well, if you have a bodiless case, you don't know exactly, potentially, what day it happened. You don't know where it happened. You may not know the manner in which it happened, which then adds the question, well, can you prove this beyond a reasonable doubt that this person was killed intentionally and through premeditation? So one of the things you have to do on these bodiless murder cases as a prosecutor is you have to say to law enforcement, okay, go back out, and if you haven't done this already, please do so. You need to subpoena all of her bank records, subpoena all of her credit card records. You need to look into any vehicle that the person would have had access to. You need to look at, if they didn't have a vehicle, did they utilize flights out of Omaha, taxis out of Omaha? You have to be able to tell the jury that we've checked into all of this stuff, and there's no indication that this victim is still alive because they haven't used their credit cards, they haven't accessed their bank account, they haven't driven their vehicle. You have to check off all these boxes because every once in a while you do hear about a case where someone's been missing for 20 years and then pops up under a different name in an entirely different state. So then the next question you had was on venue. As prosecutor, we're required to establish that the crime occurred in our jurisdiction in Douglas County, which is, again, difficult if you don't know exactly what happened because you don't have a body. In this case, we had a number of things that tended to indicate that the crime occurred in Douglas County. We note that the last date that anyone saw Carrie Farber alive was on November 13, 2012. We were able to establish that she woke up in Douglas County that day, that she accessed her Facebook from a Wi-Fi in Douglas County, that she was last seen at 6:20 in the morning in Douglas County that day, that she was expected to work to be at work at 8 o'clock that morning at a location also in Douglas County. We know that after she disappeared, someone, and we believe we established it was Shanna Golier, used Carrie Farber's debit card in Douglas County a few days later, and we believe we established that the defendant used Carrie Farber's cell phone in Douglas County a few days later using a ping technology. And ultimately, Carrie Farber's vehicle was recovered in Douglas County, which all led the judge to find that this crime did occur in Douglas County, Nebraska.
And I would think that at the beginning of this, you're trying to decide, all right, I got to explain this to a jury. This is 12 ordinary citizens that aren't law trained, that are from different backgrounds, different education levels. This is a complicated case. That decision's taken out of your hands when Shanna Golier waives her right to a jury trial and is tried to a bench. How did that change your strategy?
It changed it somewhat. It is highly unusual to waive your right to a jury in any criminal case, but especially in a first-degree murder case. In this particular case, it was, I think, apparent what the strategy was on the defense side. I think their intention was they wanted to get this case to trial as fast as possible. Now, your typical murder case, at least in Douglas County, it usually won't go to trial to a jury for about a year or so, because there's so many pretrial matters that need to be taken care of in terms of discovery and motions practice. In this case, Jim Davis, the defense attorney, said, we're in a waive jury. We want a trial as soon as possible, and in order to get that, we will try this case to the bench.
And so that changes how you do, because that's a lot of preparation time you don't have. So you got to rely on law enforcement that they did their job. And you, in fact, had a law enforcement officer sitting with you during the trial, right?
Yeah, which was unusual. What we did is, in every criminal case, all the witnesses are sequestered. But in Nebraska, there's a rule that allows the state to designate a particular person as a state representative and allows them to remain in the courtroom throughout the trial, even if they're going to be a witness. So we used that statute to designate a law enforcement officer to sit at a table with us, and we chose the officer because that officer was extremely familiar with all the digital evidence, all the photographs, all the search warrants in the case. And whenever we needed something pulled up, he had the entire case file located on his laptop and was able to pull it up at a moment's notice.
Shanna Golier is ultimately convicted. How long was it between the end of the trial and when you got the verdict?
Well, what we ended up doing is we had closing arguments. The court, Judge Burns, said he would take the matter under advisement, and then he gave us a date and time at which time he would then deliver the verdict. We arrived for that date and time. It was not the same day, of course, and he ended up finding the defendant guilty as charged of the murder in the first degree and the arson in the second degree.
And, you know, you're sitting there as a prosecutor, and I'm sure you dealt with family. Carrie Farber left behind a nice young man, Waxwell, her son. She had a mother there, other family members. And you've got to have a gut as a prosecutor how the verdict's going to go a lot of times. How do you think? Were you certain on this one? Was it different?
Well, you never know what's going to happen. In fact, we always tell people when people ask me, well, what's going to happen at this trial, is I would always say, the only guarantee I can give you is I'm going to work my tail off to get the best result possible, because you don't know what a jury is going to do. You don't know what a judge is going to do. However, in this case, I was very pleased with how the evidence was presented. All the evidence that we wanted to get before the judge did come in. Our witnesses testified well. And so I think we were very well positioned to get a favorable outcome, and thankfully we did.
And so far, you've talked to Leslie Rule, written a book. You've talked to Dateline. You were on Dateline with Keith Morrison. This is the type of trial that these are the ones that, you know, once you retire from the bench, you're going to think back on your days as a prosecutor, and this will be one you'll never forget, right?
Yeah, I mean, this one is just so bizarre. It's hard to even wrap your mind around it. When this was first presented to me, I was like, is this like a made-for-lifetime TV movie? Because it just reads like some type of like script that doesn't make any sense and seems so fantastical. But it's all true.
Yeah, just amazing the story that came out of there. All right, well, Leslie's book is called A Tangled Web. That's available now. The Dateline episode just re-aired. It's out there. I'm sure there's going to be other true crime stories about this to come over the years because it is a completely bizarre case. Jim Masteller, now Judge Jim Masteller, the prosecutor, co-prosecutor on this case, thanks for joining us to explain a little more about this case to us.
Thank you, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.